Edyard remembered his manners and bowed.
Yes, mistress, that's me.
Mistress? She smiled, which turned into a grimace as she fought back tears.
I'm mistress of nothing.
Our family is a giant curse, a joke. How could the lady allow this to happen? Please don't give up hope. I will do everything I can to ensure your sister's return.
Everything you can? And what's that?
She winced.
I'm sorry. She's my sister. I love her so much.
Why didn't they take me?
Why?
I don't know. Edyard desperately wanted to put his arms round her, to offer some comfort. She was younger than him by a year or so, he decided, and her pain, swelling out of an unshielded mind, was humbling.
If you talk to them, she said, the beasts who did this, offer them me instead. I want to take her place, please. They can do whatever they like to me, I don't care. I just want my Manatha home. Tell them that. Make them understand. I'm more valuable anyway. I'm the first daughter. I will be mistress of this district.
Your task, Mistress Christabel, is to stay here and be strong for your father. He let conviction fill his voice. I will bring your sister back to you.
Words, that's all. Promises. I have heard the like 1,000 times from the lips of masters. They are worth nothing.
Let me try. I am not a master. Do not give up hope yet, please. She wrung her hands together in anguish.
Do you really think there is hope?
Always, he told her gravely.
Are you going to deliver the ransom?
If that is what's needed, then yes.
I overheard our family guards. They say it's a trap.
It is.
You don't even know, Manatha.
I don't have to.
You really are a good man, aren't you? Is that why the gangs hate you so much?
I expect so. She straightened up, smoothing her nightdress, then gave him a questing glance.
Did you really turn down Ranelagh?
He bowed again.
Yes, mistress. Don't call me that.
She smiled bravely, then darted forward. Edyard felt her lips upon his cheek. He was too surprised to pull back.
The lady bless you, Water Walker.
She turned and scurried away down the Hortus. He walked back into Manatha's nursery with his thoughts in complete turmoil.
What's the matter with you?
Dinlay asked.
Why are they doing this?
Edyard asked, gazing round the room. He'd never actually seen so much pink in one place before.
To screw you over, Boyd said.
It was a rhetorical question. They want me out in Oastorn. Because they think if I'm all by myself, they can kill me, right?
It's what I'd do, Maxon said, ignoring the exasperated glare Cancine gave him. They'll have a small army out there. Even if we're only 10 minutes away, it'll be all over by the time we can reach you. They'll probably pick us off as well for a good measure.
But that turns us into martyrs, like he said. That gives our cause strength. Possibly even enough strength to carry tomorrow's vote.
Who said?
Dinlay queried.
That's not so good then, Maxon admitted. Manatha won't be coming back either.
That way you get the blame, Boyd said. With no surviving witnesses, they'll arrange it to seem like you tried something reckless. The city will believe you're responsible for her death. After all, you had the ransom money. No criminal in their right mind would jeopardize that much coinage, especially after such a well-executed kidnap.
And the exclusion warrants end along with us, Edyard concluded.
Clever.
So what do we do?
Cancine asked. Edyard turned to the small wooden bed, exquisitely crafted to resemble a swan, picturing a small sleeping child curled up daintily under the mauve sheets.
Find her.
Yeah, Maxon said. That would be good. Word of the kidnap is already spreading through the city. People are getting upset, you can sense that. Everyone is going to be looking for her. It's a double sacrilege on this day. The gangs will have no sympathy on this. She'll be hidden deep. That's if she's even still alive.
She's alive, Edyard said, taking a slow step towards the bed. They need her until midnight. That's how they control me.
Snatch Ivar, Dinlay said excitedly. Fight fire with fire, they'll never expect that. They'll have to exchange her for him.
Maxen gave Dinlay an astonished look.
Well, I certainly never expected to hear that from your lips. I'm impressed. It has the advantage of complete surprise.
And yet?
No. Anyway, Ival had no part in this.
How do you know that? Boyd asked.
He just told me. Edyard stroked the bed's canopy, still trying to imagine Manatha.
He told you? The rest of the squad were giving each other amazed glances.
Yes. Do me a favor, guard the doors. Stop anyone from coming in here. I need to be alone for a while.
Okay, Maxon said reasonably.
Do you want to tell us why?
I want to remember, Edyard said.
They were good. They didn't question him further. They had strong doubts, he could tell that. But they went out and stood beside the doors and started talking among themselves.
Edyard pressed himself to the wall behind the bed and slipped his farsight into the unyielding substance of which the mansion was fabricated.
I need to know, he told it. I need to see what you remember.
Down at the very threshold of perception, attuned with the city's slumbering thoughts, images shimmered like the recollections of a dream. People moved inside the nursery, himself and the squad. He followed the memory back. Julian was in the room, shouting in fury. Christabel crying as you would at a funeral. Further back, the frantic guards and nurses. Beyond that, the nurse coming in to find no sign of Manatha. And then, there she was in the dead of night, a delightful little girl clutching her fluffy bear as she slept, untroubled by dreams. Edyard slowed his quest through the stream of memory and moved forward again. It was long after midnight when the figure materialized in the near lightless nursery. A man wrapped in a dark coat, dissolving his concealment to stand above the bed. Edyard didn't know him, but the features were vaguely familiar. If pressed, he would say the kidnapper was related to Tanal, one of Ranelagh's army of cousins, perhaps, and his cloak was expensive, as were the boots. This was no ordinary gang lieutenant. The man took a pad of cloth from his pocket and splashed some liquid on it from a small brown bottle. The pad was pressed hard over Manatha's face. She struggled briefly. Edyard clenched his fists, wanting to pound the kidnapper, to make him suffer before he died. A deeply unconscious Manatha was lifted from her bed. The fluffy bear was dropped to the floor, and the man's concealment enveloped both of them. A second later, the door opened and shut as if by its own accord.
Oh, lady, Edyard exclaimed in dismay.
No matter how many times he immersed himself in the memory, the mansion couldn't see the kidnapper inside his concealment. He held the moment the kidnapper lifted the child from her bed, seeing it as plain as if he were standing right beside them. There must be some other way the mansion can remember him, though Edyard didn't have much confidence. He and the squad had experimented for weeks to see if concealment had a weakness, a way they could sense through it. They hadn't found one yet. Akim's final gift appeared to be without a single flaw. Now, studying the kidnapper, Edyard desperately tried to think what might betray the man's position. The beagle had caught his scent in the House of Blue Petals, but the city didn't smell. The air that moved as he walked back down the stairs? There was no memory of anything so slight. He looked at Manatha's face as she was lifted up, so pale, her hair dangling limply, the kidnapper's face drawn slightly as he struggled to accept the child's weight.
Wait!
Edyard shouted happily, and he was right. The floor remembered the weight, each and every footfall. Now, shifting through the vast pool of memory stored within the substance of the mansion, he concentrated on the sensation of weight alone. In his mind he could visualize the corridor outside the nursery, its floor a simple white strip, blue dints along the edge where expensive antique tables and chairs rested. A leaden maroon imprint appeared outside Manatha's nursery door. Another followed. The imprints pattered their way along the corridor and into the main stairwell. The kidnapper spiraled his way down. The squad gave Edyard a curious look as he came out of the nursery. It wasn't right that he should be smiling.
What in Honius's name have you been doing in there? Dinlay asked.
We've had our hands full keeping the family out. And Julian says the ransom is ready. The flag is flying over the Orchard Palace.
A militia escort is saddling up to escort you clear of the city. You're going to need a couple of G-horses to carry so much gold. Edyard glanced up at the corridor's crystal roof to see the sun was almost directly overhead. Outside, the usual long talk babble was subdued. Macathran's citizens were incensed by the kidnapping, their fear and hatred combined to a sullen resentment. This was not the happy festival of guidance they wanted. He had no idea it had taken so long to filter through the mansion's memories. It didn't matter, nor did the ransom. "I know where she is," he announced.
"Where?" Dinlay demanded.
"Know how?" Maxon asked shrewdly. Edyard gave him a level stare. The city remembered.
"The city remembered?"
"Yes." Maxon gave Cansine and Boyd a very dubious look.
"Uh-huh."
"She's underneath a fish-smoking business on Lane Street in Fieka. The family used two levels of cellars under the building to smoke their fish, but there's another level beneath that, four chambers. They've taken it over."
"They?"
10 of them, maybe more. Even I can't far-sight that accurately from here." Boyd clapped his hands delightedly.
"Brilliant! We've got her!"
"Not quite. You don't need over 10 people to stop one 6-year-old from escaping an underground prison. And they know we can work a concealment."
"They'll kill her,"
Dinlay said forlornly. "There's too many to take them by surprise." "I think you're right," Edyard said.
"So what do we do?"
Cansine asked. Edyard smiled. "Take them by surprise." He long-talked Ronark back at the station and asked for some weapons to be brought over.
"You're sure she's still alive?" Maxon asked.
Edyard smiled.
"Yeah,
she's alive."
"Finally, some good news. The city isn't happy, Edyard. Today was supposed to be a festival. Everyone knows now, and there's a lot of agitators out there blaming you."
"Charming."
"The Pythia is going to begin the service of guidance with a plea to release Manartha," Dinlay said. "That's at midday, in 10 minutes. Do you want to tell her before she begins?"
"Lady, no. We haven't got Manartha yet."
Cansine shook her head as she broke off trying to farsight.
"Lady, I can barely sense the smoking business from in here. I can't tell what's underneath."
"They're there," Edyard assured them.
"So what's the plan?" Dinlay asked. "We could surround the building. Once everyone knows Manartha is in there, the gangs won't be able to do anything. They'll have to let her go."
"Come on," Edyard said. He led them down the corridor, retracing the kidnapper's footsteps. "They're not going to let her go just because people don't like it. These men were chosen because they'll fight to the very end. They're the ones we've already broken. People like Edis, who have nothing to lose. This is not about the girl. It never was. It's about tomorrow's vote and how to get the outcome they need." Mistress Florel stepped out of the lounge doorway, just as they reached the main stairwell.
"Where do you think you're going?" she snapped at Edyard. "Running away, I suppose. Well, good riddance to you."
"We're going to get her back, actually," Dinlay said hotly.
Edyard winced.
"You're doing what?"
She was trembling with outrage. Edyard cleared his throat and looked calmly at his most persistent foe. "I might know where she is. I'm going to do my duty and bring her home. That's what we all want, isn't it?"
"You'll do no such thing. If you know where she is, you'll inform the mayor immediately. A regiment of militia will bring back my poor dear Manartha. They know exactly how to deal with anyone who dares to attack one of my descendants."
"With respect, Mistress Florel, they don't. I will bring her back unharmed. You have my word." Edyard turned to the top of the curving stairs.
"Come back here, young man,"
Mistress Florel said with quiet insistence. Edyard couldn't believe it. Thanks to Dybald's recognition gift, his mind perceived her long talk trying to insinuate itself into his consciousness, a soothing compulsion for him to come to her just as she had suggested. She was trying to dominate him. He raised an eyebrow disdainfully as his mental shield closed.
"Naughty,"
he said, and wagged a forefinger at her. She blanched, her hand pressing theatrically against her throat. A smiling Edyard led the way down the stairs.
"Bet we never make it out of the mansion," Maxon said cheerfully as they reached the 9th floor.
"Outside," Boyd said. "That's ambitious.
will never make it to the bottom of the stairs.
Do you know who took the girl? Cancine asked.
No. Ediard gifted them the vision of the kidnapper. Do any of you?
He's a Gilmorn, Maxon said. Or sired by a Gilmorn, at any rate. Look at that nose.
Maybe we should tell Julin we found his daughter, Dinlay said with a hint of anxiety. I mean, surely he deserves to know. If we're going to put her at risk, he must have the final say.
I'm not telling him what I can do, Ediard said flatly. I don't know where his allegiance is.
Well, he's hardly going to be on their side, Boyd said.
Not today, no. But let's face it, we don't even know who they really are, do we?
The squad had reached the third floor when Grandmaster Finnerton long-talked Ediard. His telepathic voice was directed so skillfully it was as though the master was standing beside him on the stairs, whispering into his ear.
Ediard, whatever have you done to my least favourite aunt?
What did she say I'd done?
Well, arrogance and incompetence were the mildest complaints. I'm supposed to be long-talking you out of rescuing Manatha. Apparently she thinks I have influence over you.
Are you going to?
Certainly not. Do you know where the poor girl is?
I think so.
Ediard, I hate to be unpleasantly harsh on poor little Manatha, but you do understand what's at stake, don't you?
Tomorrow's vote.
There is another tactic I could use in council. I've hesitated before now because it looked like we could win a straight challenge.
What tactic?
A plebiscite. There will be enough masters to support that motion. Many of them are troubled. They see the progress you've made in Jeevans and Silvarum, and there is enormous pressure from the general population to continue your campaign. But Manatha's death would give them the option to vote down the warrants. If we were left in uncertainty for the council meeting tomorrow, then they would jump at the chance to defer the decision and be able to place blame elsewhere.
Ediard paused on the stairs.
You mean do nothing?
It's a long way to Oerstorn. You might be able to ensure news took an equally long time to come back.
Sir, I cannot do that. More than anyone, I want the gangs out of this city. But I cannot play politics with the life of a 6-year-old innocent. I know where she is, and I know what has to be done to bring her back to her family. Right now, that's all that matters.
Of course. You'll have my support, no matter what. May the lady be with you this day.
Thank you, sir.
They were on the last flight of stairs when Julin's voice echoed down from above.
Stop! Stop, I forbid this! You must not do anything rash! I have the ransom! Water Walker, come back! The flag flies over Orchard Palace as they asked.
His long talk was added to the plea.
You promised me. You said you would bring her back.
Ediard looked up to see the broken master leaning over the rail far above.
I will bring her back to you, sir. Trust me.
No. No. There is to be no fighting. Pay the ransom. That is the only way she will come back unharmed.
I give you my word I will not endanger her. If it takes the ransom to release her, I will carry it to them for you.
Wait. You know where she is, don't you?
I'm not sure.
My aunt says you do. Wait. I will come with you.
Oh, lady, Ediard groaned.
We can be there before he even gets down here, Boyd urged.
No, we can't, Maxon said through gritted teeth.
Ediard looked down. Homelt and a number of guards were standing at the foot of the stairs.
Does anybody want this girl to live? He growled.
We do, Ediard, Cancine assured him.
Right then. He took the last flight of stairs at a run.
I have my orders, Homelt said as the squad confronted him.
His hand rested on his pistol holster.
What are they? Ediard asked reasonably.
Not to let you leave the mansion. It's not just Master Julin. I could maybe ignore that on this day, but Lorin backed him up, and he does have his wits about him.
I'll say naught about Mistress Florel.
The guard captain glanced up. Several people were on the 8th flight of stairs, making a commotion as they wound their way inexorably down.
Fair enough, Ediard said. Don't let us out.
Homelt flashed him a hugely relieved look.
You'll wait for the master.
Not quite, Ediard leaned forwards. She is alive. I know where she is.
I will come with you, Water Walker, Homelt said softly.
No, this is not the help she needs. Already the news is spreading. We have to be quick. You know they'll kill her, and you know why.
Homelt's anguish was visible for all to see.
What do you want me to do?
Take us down to your deepest cellar, the one on the northwestern corner of the mansion, and we'll need your pistols, too.
Hurry, man, or it'll be too late.
Homelt glanced up the stairwell. Julin was on the 7th flight of stairs.
Quickly, then.
The cellar door was ancient wood, long since blackened so that no grain showed. Nails holding the hinges against the city's original open arch were in need of reinserting. The city's substance had rejected over half of their length. That looseness made the heavy door swing about unsteadily as Homelt drew the bolts back and opened it. Barrels and crates cluttered the small room, caked in decades of dust and fill-rat droppings.
I don't understand, the guard captain said, peering into the gloomy space. What's in here?
Us, Ediard told him. Lock us in here. That way you will have obeyed your orders to the letter.
What about Manartha?
Trust me. For a moment, Ediard thought he might refuse, and march them all upstairs for Julin and Lauren to sort out. But after a moment of hesitation, while his mind showed a huge amount of uncertainty, Homelt ushered them all into the cellar, gave them a pistol each, and shut the door.
Far be it for my humble self to criticize, Maxon said as the bolts were slammed back into place with some force, but I don't understand either.
If we are to rescue Manartha alive, it means we won't be able to take prisoners, Ediard told them gravely. He brandished a pistol, examining its mechanism with his farsight. Are you still with me?
We're with you, Cansine said.
But will you please tell us what in all of Honius is going on? I thought we'd got past this whole trust thing.
Ediard grinned broadly. This'll test your trust as nothing else. Step where I do, one at a time. You will feel like you're falling, but I promise you're not. If you can't do this, I'll think no less of you.
He asked a circle of floor to let him through. It changed. Ediard stepped on it and fell through the blackness into the great major canal tunnel. Once he'd landed on the ledge above the water, he moved to one side and waited. It was Boyd who came through first, yelling in shock the whole way until his feet touched the ledge.
Fuck the lady!
He bellowed in fright-driven excitement. Still grinning, Ediard grabbed his friend's shoulder and dragged him aside as Cansine came through, little whimpering sounds burping out of her throat as her arms windmilled furiously. She looked round in astonishment.
This is incredible. I had no idea this existed.
Ediard caught her arm and just managed to pull her out of the way of Dinlay's feet. Dinlay's eyes were screwed up shut behind his glasses.
Wahoo!
Maxon yelled wildly as he dropped through the roof of the tunnel. Ediard faced his friends, still unable to wipe the grin off his face. He'd rarely sensed their minds so unguarded, but surprise had left them too jittery to veil their emotions as usual.
So,
he drawled, you must have been keeping these tunnels from me. What, with you city natives knowing everything there is to know about your own home?
You bastard,
Maxon said happily.
What is this?
This is the tunnel under the great major canal. Every canal has one.
But how?
Dinlay was blinking up at the roof of the tunnel, his farsight probing the substance to try and find where they'd come through.
I'm the Water Walker, Ediard told them. Remember?
Seriously? Cansine asked with a noticeable edge in her voice. How did we get here?
I'm not sure exactly. I just ask the city and it lets me through.
You just ask the city?
Yep, he said, faintly apologetic.
After today, you have a lot more explaining to do.
Ediard sobered up. Then let's get today over with.
Their mood followed his down to a more somber level. He started to walk along the tunnel towards Forest Pool. The fish smoking business is only one street back from Pink Canal.
So you do have a plan then, Maxon said.
Yes. The way we come down reverses. The five of us will slide up into the cellars close to where Manartha is being held.
You said there's 10 of them.
At least. I'm worried the kidnapper is there as well. He can conceal himself.
so we'll never know for sure until we're there. The first thing they'll do at any sign of rescue is kill Manatha. It won't matter how clever I've been finding her, or how good we are at sneaking up on them if she's dead at the end of it all. Why go up there at all? Kansine asked. Just ask the city to let her fall down here. First off, she's shackled to the wall. We'd have to break the chains, and even I can't do that from down here. Secondly, there's no tunnel directly underneath her cellar, not even a drain. We're going to have to come up in the next one to hers. Crap, Boyd muttered. We go up concealed, Edyard said. If I can get into the cellar where they're keeping her, my third hand should be able to protect her from bullets. It's going to be up to you to cover my back. They splashed across the shallow basin that emulated Forest Pool high above. Edyard could just far-sight people gathering along the sides of the canals, children with their flower boats, eager to launch them, adults still seething over Manatha. How many in her cellar? Kansine asked. Two that I can sense. He still wasn't sure about the kidnapper. The cellar had many old crates and lengths of wood, as well as a couple of small benches. If anyone with a concealment was sitting on them, he couldn't tell. Certainly the cellar floor had no current memory of anyone else standing on it. It would take a long time to filter through the day's memories. How are you going to get to her, then? Brute force. As soon as we're all up there, I make a run for the door. I can smash through it and get in front of her, where I can protect her. Then I just hang on while you take the others out. And if it goes wrong? Then we're all dead, and Macathran has to find someone else to campaign against the gangs. Kansine gave him a disapproving grin. You're going to make a terrible chief constable. Grand councillors are supposed to be smooth and subtle. You can teach me. You'll have 100 years after all. No, she said. You move quicker than that. Edyard led them along Pink Canal Tunnel, then off into the drain fissure until they were standing underneath the cellar, closest to where Manatha was being held captive. I can sense her, Kansine said excitedly. The poor thing's terrified.
Everyone ready? Edyard asked.
When they assured him they were, he said, I think I can do this so we all go up together. Remember, keep yourself concealed until they know I'm there, then take them out. And for the lady's sake, don't call out. You're not actually falling. It only feels like it. Wait, Boyd said. It feels like we're falling when we're going up. Yes, and no. I don't know why. Maxon clicked the safety catch off his pistol. Let's just go. See you all up there. All right, Edyard said. He concealed himself and waited until the others had vanished from his sight, then told the city to take them up. The cellar he slid up into was barely high enough for him to stand upright. It was a simple oblong box of a room with dark walls inset with narrow alcoves and a shallow vaulted ceiling of lierne ribs. Ancient fishing nets and tish crab cages were piled up along one wall. One doorway opened onto a spiral stair up to the smoking caverns above. The kidnappers were sitting at two wooden tables in front of it, slowly consuming a quantity of food. There was no beer or wine, just water, Edyard saw. Whoever had organized this had chosen well. These men had a ruthless discipline. They'd use the pistols resting on the table without a qualm. Just standing among them made him worry for the squad. One of them started to look round the room, frowning.
Did you hear something?
Edyard made for the half-open door. He wiggled his way round through the gap, not daring to breathe. Behind him, the kidnappers were picking their pistols off the table. Powerful long-talk voices were directing questions at the guards upstairs. Edyard looked along the low corridor. The smell of fish and oak smoke was heavy in the air. Directly opposite him was a door to the cellar where Manatha was being held. It was made from tie wood planks 3 inches thick, with iron hinges that had recently been reset in the walls. There were heavy bolts on either side, and both sets were drawn shut. He braced himself against the wall, summoned up the full strength of his third hand, then leapt forwards. His concealment dropped as he was halfway across the corridor. The door burst apart as he smashed it with his third hand, putting up no more resistance than if it had been made of glass. A shout in the cellar behind, "Hey!" as their far sight caught him. Then he was through the smashed door
and folding his third hand protectively round the dazed little girl. Three pistol shots boomed out behind him, appallingly loud in the confines of the underground chambers. His farsight caught Kansin flicker into view behind one of the kidnappers sitting at the table. He was rising to his feet. Kansin's pistol was aimed at the back of his skull. She pulled the trigger, and his face exploded outwards in a spray of gore. Kansin vanished again. Dinlay was firing into the side of another kidnapper, his mind ablaze with rage and fear. He vanished. Maxin appeared on the other side of the cellar. Ediard's pistol was swinging round to line up on one of the two men guarding Manatha as he charged across the cellar. It was hardly a perfect aim, but he fired anyway, getting off four shots. More pistol shots echoed round him. Shouts and long talk howls behind him created a bedlam of white noise. The guard he'd shot at grunted in shock and stared down at his tunic to see a huge stain of blood spreading across his chest. Two bullets punched Ediard, knocking him to one side. One bullet hit his third hand directly above Manatha's head. Then he was squashed up against her, closing his arms round her shaking shoulders as she screamed a soprano wail that never ended. More pistol shots. One slammed into his neck, fired by the uninjured guard. Ediard reached out with his third hand, his strength shoving through the man's own shield. He ripped at the man's brain. The skull cracked, blood pulsed out of his ears as he crumpled to the ground. Another bullet smacked into Ediard. He shifted his far-sight focus to see the injured guard slumped against a wall, holding his pistol up, arm wavering about. He was drawing breath in feeble gulps as his blood spilt onto the floor. Ediard's third hand wrenched the gun from his numb fingers, rotated it 180 degrees, pulled the trigger. Three more shots from outside, and the shouting cut off. "Ediard!" Maxon shouted. "All right, in here. Are you okay?" "Wait," he ordered, tightening his physical hold around the girl, keeping his shield as hard as rock. Manatha had fainted. He instinctively knew something was wrong. After the first guard had gone down, the second one had fired. Two shots had struck him, and a third was aimed at Manatha. They couldn't possibly have come from just one pistol. The squad were tumbling out of the cellar opposite. "Wait," he called again. "Don't come in." "What's happening?" Boyd demanded. Ediard knew he should have been delighted that all his friends were alive. Instead, he scanned round and round the room, looking for the slightest telltale sign. The cellar floor revealed nothing. There were no human feet standing on it. Ediard used his third hand to shatter the bench the guards had been using. Nothing. He crunched the second bench and all the chairs.
"Lady!"
He lifted up a length of splintered wood and sent it scything round the room. Kansin and Dinlay were crouched halfway down the corridor, pistols held ready, their faces registering bewilderment as their farsight followed his actions. Ediard swung the wood through three orbits of the cellar without connecting to anything. He scraped it along the wall at waist height, jabbing it viciously into every alcove as he performed a complete circuit. Again, nothing.
"You're good,"
he acknowledged, and reached out with his farsight to feel what the cellar floor and walls were feeling, hunting for that elusive pressure of human feet. His perception swept back and forth. Then, finally, the last kidnapper was revealed.
"Very clever," Ediard said, and meant it.
He turned round, still keeping Manatha centered within his protective telekinesis. He aimed his pistol up at the ceiling to one side of the door, and fired the remaining two shots in quick succession. The kidnapper's concealment fizzled out as the bullet struck, revealing him clinging to the small iron ribs like some human spider. He fell inertly to the floor, landing with a dull crack. It was the same man who'd snatched Manatha from her room. Ediard walked over to him and stared down.
"She is 6 years old, and you used her," he exclaimed in disgust.
The man's mouth opened, blood spilled out. He somehow managed a small sneer.
"Rot in Honius,"
a week-long talk sputtered. Then his thoughts were dimming. Ediard kept his farsight on those final flutters of emotion, searching for the slightest hint of regret, some explanation of why a person could be so cold. More blood bubbled out of the kidnapper's mouth as he exhaled for the last time. Yet Ediard could still sense his thoughts, enfeebled wisps of their original strength and pattern. The body had died, but they persisted.
Then they moved. Edyard gulped in shock and took a step back as the kidnapper's soul diffused gracefully out of his body. The spectral entity hovered over the corpse for a few moments, then ascended into the ceiling and was lost to Edyard's farsight.
"Did you sense that?" he asked the squad in astonishment.
"Edyard?" Kansine asked. "Is it safe?"
Yeah. That was his soul, wasn't it?"
"His soul?" She edged cautiously across the remnants of the door. Any curiosity was instantly forgotten as she saw Manatha.
"Whose soul?"
Maxon asked brashly as he followed Kansine in. Edyard couldn't take his eyes off the ceiling where the soul had vanished.
"The kidnappers."
"Did you get shot?" Maxon asked in concern.
"No."
A moan from Manatha succeeded in drawing Edyard's attention back down.
"Don't let her see this," he blurted.
There was blood and gore all over the cellar, and the bodies. A scene that was even worse in the cellar at the bottom of the stairs. "Are all of you okay?"
"Oh, now you ask,"
Boyd joshed.
"I think I'm going to be sick," Dinley said. His constable tunic was covered in blood.
Edyard's third hand snapped the iron shackles round Manatha's wrists. Kansine blinked at the nonchalant show of strength.
"You carry her," she said, stroking the girl's brow, gentle with concern.
Her hand and sleeve were speckled with arterial blood.
"But this is your victory," Kansine insisted.
Edyard nodded.
"Thank you, all of you."
Boyd's solemn face broke into a wild smile.
"By the lady, we got her.
We bloody did it."
They were all laughing in shaky relief as Edyard scooped up the small child and carried her out of the cellar. People were crowding round the top of the stairs as he made his way out of the smoking chambers. Workers and family members with worried faces and probing farsight. That worry changed to consternation as the water walker himself emerged into their midst. They backed off, fast.
"No good trying to hide,"
Boyd said as they made their way out through the shop at the front of the building. "The local constables will be calling." He paused.
"That's if the Culverit family guards don't pay you a visit first."
Edyard stepped out into the midday sun, blinking at how bright it was. It seemed as if he hadn't been outside in the light for a week, yet it was less than an hour since Homelt had taken them into the mansion's cellar. He got his bearings swiftly enough and started walking down Lane Street. Manatha stirred as they turned into Arnold Avenue, heading for Pink Canal. She started suddenly, looking round frantically.
"It's all right," Edyard told her. "We're taking you home to your family. Your father and sister are worried about you."
She gave him a wide-eyed stare.
"You're the water walker."
"Yes, I am."
"They took—" she cried. "I was in a dark room. I couldn't far see anything. They were horrible. I—
"It's over. Look. It's a bright sunny day. We should be back at your home in time for you to see the flower boats."
She clung to him.
"What happened to the bad men?"
"You won't see them again, I promise." There were a lot of people lined up along the side of the canal, standing at least six deep as they waited for the end of the ceremony in the ladies' grand church. It was mostly excited children at the front, clutching their flower boats, with parents standing behind, pleading and warning not to put their craft into the water until the Pythia was finished. Edyard actually smiled as he finally saw the multitude of flower boats being held ready. They were spectacularly beautiful. From endearing little paper craft with a couple of daisies clutched by toddlers, to elaborate vessels with a rainbow of blooms crafted by proud older children, their happy faces were wonderfully uplifting. He started to make his way through the crowd, head swiveled in his direction. Surprise turned to shock when they saw the squad, uniforms covered in blood, tired yet cheerful, with the water walker himself carrying the kidnapped girl, who smiled up at him with shy adulation. Silence fell. The crowd parted, giving him a clear path to the mooring platform at the end of the avenue. Someone started clapping. Whispers of amazement turned to exultant long talk and shouts of approval. Most people were joining the applause.
"It's the water walker."
"They've rescued the girl."
"Manatha is alive."
"Dear lady,
Look at the blood. It's his whole squad. They did it. They saved her.
Three gondolas were secured to the platform, each of them garlanded with hundreds of snow-white flowers. Ediard stepped onto the first boat as the gondolier took his hat off and held it to his chest, staring at Manartha.
Get us to her mansion, Ediard told him. But the festival?
The Pythias ceremony isn't over yet, and I think Manartha deserves to go home, don't you?
Yes, sir, of course.
He picked up his punt. By now, everyone was packed right up to the edge of the canal. The applause and cheering put Ediard right back to that day in Birmingham Pool.
Let's see how quick you are,
he told the gondolier as they pushed off. It wasn't far. Down to Forest Pool, then they went up the Grand Major Canal to the Culverit Mansion's private mooring platform at the edge of High Pool. Manartha sat up on the prow, looking from side to side in utter bliss, as waves of applause and cheering followed her progress home.
Do you think they'll even bother with the vote tomorrow? Maxon said quietly, as he waved at the enthusiastic onlookers crammed along the canal.
Flower boats were being held aloft and waved in heartfelt greeting for the little girl. The whole canal rippled with dramatic colours.
Not a lot of point, Boyd replied. Can you boys just enjoy the moment? Cansine said. I mean, come on. We're getting some adulation this time, too.
I'm going to be sick, Dinlay said, dabbing at the congealing blood on his uniform.
Don't you dare, she told him crossly.
Manartha gripped Ediard's arm. Her other hand pointed ahead to the mansion's mooring platform.
I see Daddy, she squealed, and Chrissy. They're both there.
She started to wave frantically, long talking for all she was worth. And Mistress Florel isn't, Boyd muttered contentedly. The gondolier steered them smoothly into the side of the platform. Julian snatched his daughter out of the craft, hugging her and weeping uncontrollably. Christabel joined in. Manartha began to chatter at an incredible speed, telling them what had befallen her. One last final hurrah broke out among the crowds, running the whole length of Grand Major Canal. Ediard and the squad stepped onto the platform. Homelt stood in front of them and bowed his head.
Thank you, he said, though the lady knows how you pulled off that stunt. There is no way out of that cellar.
Ediard gave him a knowing grin. Then Julian grabbed him roughly by both shoulders and pulled him close.
I thank you, Water Walker. I thank you from the very bottom of my heart. My baby is saved.
I'm sorry we didn't take you with us, sir, Ediard said, but my squad is a good team. We work best by ourselves.
Julian couldn't stop crying. He clutched Manartha tighter.
I understand. Thank you all. You were right, I was wrong. Please. I was crazed with worry.
Nobody was wrong, sir. Manartha is back home. That's all that matters.
Yes, yes.
He lifted his daughter up again. She giggled and kissed him.
Whatever you desire in this world, it is yours, and still it will never be enough to express my gratitude to you all. Say it, and I will see it is done.
Maxon put on a wholly reasonable expression and opened his mouth. Cansine's third hand poked him in the ribs. He looked pained, but didn't say anything.
We really are just doing our duty, sir, Ediard claimed.
What nonsense!
I will start my payment by welcoming you to our family celebration feast tonight.
That's very kind of you, sir, Boyd said hurriedly, before Ediard could say no.
We'd be honored.
Thank you, Water Walker,
Manartha giggled. She leaned forward in her father's embrace and gave Ediard a messy kiss.
Yes, Christabel said, appearing directly in front of Ediard as her father made his way up the steps at the back of the platform. Thank you indeed.
He didn't quite know what to say, so settled for a modest shrug. She was still in her flimsy white cotton nightdress, though a grey-green woolen shawl was wrapped round her shoulders. Her hair wasn't quite so wild now. The squad edged closer.
You kept your word, she said.
Yes. Actually, it was a pretty stupid thing to... Her finger touched his lips.
No.
It was the greatest thing you could possibly do. No wonder the gangs and masters are so frightened of you.
I have faith in you, Water Walker. Mistress. He made a real hash of a formal bow, producing something more like a nervous twitch. Christabel, all serene like this, was quite impressive. Imposing, actually.
Ah, yes. Mistress, she said teasingly. Well, as future mistress of Hackspen, I shall require the first dance with you at our family party tonight. And the last. And, I think, everyone between.
Oh. Edyard paled. He was a rotten dancer. My pleasure. Christabel's smile widened to include all the squad.
Please. Today my house is yours, and every day to come. The view from the Upper Hortus is the best in the city from which to watch the flower boats on their way to the sea. And you must bathe and freshen up. I'll see that the staff find some clothes that fit, ready for the party.
Edyard watched her start up the wooden stairs to the fabulous ziggurat mansion towering above them. The hem of her nightdress flapped around her knees. I must not look at her legs. I must not.
Cansine's head slipped sinuously over his left shoulder. You do know, don't you? She said quietly, that you can't actually sleep with every girl in this city.
Edyard looked at Christabel's legs. Slim, yes, but rather shapely, too.
I know, he said wistfully.
Cansine kissed his ear playfully. But you could do a lot worse than Christabel.